Parshas Kukas, everyone. The Pasuk says the following. Parak Chof Aleph, Pasuk Aleph, Ayishma Kanani Melech Arad. This is right after Aaron HaKohen had passed away. The Kanani, the king of Arad, heard Yoshev and Egev, the one who lived in the south, Ki Ba Yisrael Derech HaYisorim, that Bnei Yisrael were coming by way of the spies. This is the path of the spies. Vayilochem B'Yisrael. And he waged war against Bnei Yisrael. Vayishp Mimenu Shevi. And they took captives. There were captives taken in this war. This is the only war where Klal Yisrael was involved with throughout this midbar. I mean, until they got to the Ai, where something had happened to them. Nobody was killed, but by Yishp Mimenu Shevi. They took a capture. They took somebody captured. So Rashi tells us, Kanani is not Kanani. Kanani is a Amalek who live in that area of the south. They live in the Negev, but they knew the Jews were going to dive into Hashem to save them in a very specific way. There's a Gemara Rosh Hashanah Yudchest, that's how you're supposed to dive in. You're supposed to dive in a very specific fashion, mention exactly what you need. It's not good enough to say, Hashem, make me win the lottery. What kind of lottery? A lottery ticket? Or do you want to get a lottery, you know, one of those $20 tickets? What do you want to win? What kind of lottery do you want to win? You have to be very specific in everything you ask for. So they changed their language, the Amalekim. They spoke Kanani, so they pretended to be the Kananim, so that the Jews would daven to beat the Kananim when really they were Amalekim. The Zohar says this idea in Chelek Aleph Kuf Samach Tesamet Aleph, that you have to daven with very specific intent in order for your tefillos to be realized. The Meshech Chochma explains, the Jews would be thinking they were Kananim, who they had already been promised to defeat. Hashem had said, you're going to defeat all the seven nations, including the Kananim. So if the Jews were thinking that they're going up against Canaan, they're not going to try very hard. They're not going to have to daven very hard. They just expect to be able to win, right? Because that's the Kananim. But if they're going up against Amalek, you know they would daven harder. So that's exactly why the Amalekim pretended to be Kananim. Now it makes a lot of sense. If they were Amalekim, the Jews would daven. If they were Kananim, then they wouldn't daven so much. That's exactly what they wanted over here. They knew more than anybody else that the Jews had a koach ha-tefila. We all know the line from Yitzchak Avinu, right? Hakol kol Yaakov. Esav can fight, but Yaakov knows how to daven, and they knew that, and they were so afraid. If they wouldn't mention the Kananim, the Amalekim, just mention the Kananim, it's a chance that Amalek was going to win. But fortunately, when the Jews saw there were people dressed in Amaleki clothing, speaking the Kanani language, they were confused. Are these guys Amalekim? Because they look like Amalek. Or are they Kananim? Because they're speaking like the Kananim. They couldn't understand what it was. They weren't sure what to do, so they davened Stam. And they said, Hashem, save us from our enemies. Just Stam, save us from our enemies. They didn't mention whether it was Amalek or Kanan. About this, the Gra says, we say every day after Aleinu. Again, if you're Chabad, then you for sure say it. If you're not Chabad, it's in the Siddur. Everybody has it in the Siddur. Al tira mi pachad pisom, mi shoas rishan kisavo, utsu eitz of isivor dabur dabur leyachum ki manu keel. Right? Ad zikna ad seva ani espo vamalet. Okay? So those are the three psukim. Says the Gra, each one of these psukim refer to one of the times that they fought against Amalek. When they came out from Mitzrayim and they were shocked that Amalek came and fought them, Al tira mi pachad pisom, do not be afraid of a sudden fear that came up against you. Here, where the Kananim, the Amalekim, pretended to be something else. They had some type of eitzah to go around. Utsu eitzah visufor. They're going to give eitzahs. They're going to try to trick you. It's not going to work. That's what it refers to over here. And the third one is referring by the times of Purim. That's what it refers to over there. That's what the Gra says over there. There is an actual halacha that comes from this. This actual Gemara, this Gemara that's brought down in Rashi, bringing this down over here, there's halacha. It's a Gemara, the Meshech Chochma says, and Bav Mitzia Kuvav and Aleph. Here's the deal. If somebody rents out his field to a sharecropper, and he says to his sharecropper, I want you to plant wheat. You're planting wheat in this field. And the sharecropper then goes and plants barley instead of wheat. Plants barley instead. And then there's a flood. And the flood destroys many of the fields in that area. Not every field, but many of the fields in that area. You know what the guy can claim? The balabais, the guy who owns the field, can claim, I'm not taking a loss here. You still owe me what you owe me as a sharecropper. I'm not taking a loss. Why? Because I davened for the wheat to survive. And you planted barley. And you davened specifically. You don't daven for crops to do well. You daven for your wheat to do well. We paskin lehalacha that this is how you daven. You daven specifically and you say it in such a fashion. That's what you're supposed to do. And when they didn't do that, then all of a sudden there's a taina, there's a claim that the guy has to make. And you know what? It's an actual halacha. There's an actual halacha that comes from this, how to be able to daven. So let me ask you a question, right? So they changed their language that they would sound like Canaanim, right, Avi? Right? They didn't change their clothing. What were they thinking? Why wouldn't they change their clothing? If you're trying to be Canaanim, be Canaanim. Fake it. Fake it all the way. So what are you doing? So the Ayelas HaShachar is Steinman. Rav Steinman brings down over here that there wasn't enough time to get enough clothing for all of them. This happened all of a sudden. They saw that Aaron died. They saw the Anani Kavod had left Bnei Yisrael. They said, we got to go now. So they jumped up and they ran out to war. They could change their language, but they didn't have enough time to get clothing for everybody. For all the people that had to go out to war, that was going to be too much. So they didn't have enough time to change their clothing. So they did at least something. They faked it in some way. That's what they went ahead and did. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz brings down a famous answer in Sichos Moser. Amalek knew, and listen to this answer for a second. Amalek knew, changing your language doesn't change you as a person. But changing your clothing does. Changing your clothes makes you into a completely different clothing. Here's the deal, and listen to this line. Had they worn Kenani clothing, they'd lose their identity of Amalek. They would no longer be Amalek. They're Kenani in their language, they're Kenani in their clothing, they're done. They're no longer anything but Kenani. That's what the Amalekim would have been. Their attitude might last for a little bit, but that's different. Listen, you go into a place wearing a suit, you act like a person who's wearing a suit. You go into a place with a t-shirt and jeans or a t-shirt and shorts, you're going to act like a person with t-shirt and shorts. You're going to act like a punk. I don't mean to say it that way, right? But that's what t-shirt and shorts are, right? Who's wearing a t-shirt and shorts right now? Jeans, yeah, that's right. You're a t-shirt and jeans guy. Obviously, there's exceptions to the rule because obviously Shimmy is perfect. That's not a question whatsoever. But it depends. That's what happens. Clothing changes you as a person. This is the line, said Rav Chaim Shmulevitz. A Amalek could not change their clothing. They wouldn't be a Amalek anymore. And they knew that and they didn't do it. The Rebbe of Vorka says it. It's quoted by the Mayana Shel Torah. And the Rash Mibelz by the Pardes Yosef over here, he ends up saying if a Jew changes his clothing to wear non-Jewish clothing, he'll be a non-Jew. That's what's going to end up being over there. The Chidush HaRim says even more so, if they would have changed their clothing, then the tefillos of the Jews would have worked. What were the Jews davening for? According to Amalek, what were they saying? They're saying, save us from the Kenanim. If they were wearing Kenani clothing, they were Kenanim. And then the tefillah worked, yeah. So that's a good call, Shami. So the question is, does it really affect you that much? I decide to wear a t-shirt and shorts one day. Does that change me as a person for that day? Am I a completely different person? The answer is, according to Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, and according to the Rav Yevorka and the Rashmi Bells, yeah. Yeah. Imagine me giving this shir right now in a t-shirt and jeans. Right? T-shirt and shorts. T-shirt, shorts, and like flip-flops. Right? With like a little beach towel like wrapped around me. Right? Just coming from the pool, I'm like, all right, dudes, let's go. Right? This is not going to work. Right? Everything changes about me. All of a sudden, I'm a totally different person. I'm playing with a beach ball instead of giving the shir. It's like a completely different attitude. That's the concept. The concept is there. The concept is there. And then it comes into whether or not how that works through. So let me ask you something. Hold on. Tom Bidas, this is Rav Sternbach, says, that's so strange. Does that make any sense to you? The Amalekim were worried about the Jews davening to Hashem? About how they would daven? So they purposely wore, listen to this, they purposely wore Kenani clothing. Why? Because they were worried that the Jews were going to daven for what? They were going to daven that they would win instead of that. What is it? Amalek doesn't believe in God. Amalek believes in randomness. Where all of a sudden they're worried about the tefillos of Klal Yisrael? They have to change because of that? That's ridiculous. They're the root of all evil. They shouldn't care about this whatsoever. Their plan was different. They wanted to trick the Jews into thinking that you can remain a Jew with your clothing and still speak peaceably to others. Listen to this line. I know I said that if you change your clothing, you become another person. That's not the point, according to this idea from Sternbach. The point is, you can be that person that you were, wear the clothing that you are, but you know what? You can speak our language. Just talk to us, they were saying to the Jews. The Amalekim were doing a different type of trickery. This was not a war, a battle, where they were necessarily going out with weapons. They were showing the Jews, just talk to us. Let's have some type of banter between us. Let's make a couple jokes. Let's sit together at a bar and see how it goes between the two of us. And they were saying, they were showing them. Amalek was saying, we can change our language and not change our clothing. We retain our identity as Amalekim. But if you change your language, you can get along with your neighbors. Then everything's going to be okay. And the Jews saw through it. They saw exactly what Amalek was trying to do. You want to be our friends? It never works out well when we try to be friends with Amalek. You try to be friends with Amalek, Nazi Germany comes out. That's what it ends up being. You don't try to be friends with Amalek. I'm not saying that's true about every non-Jew. I'm not saying it's not true about every language. I'm saying if Amalek comes up with this idea, it's something that is there for the detriment of the Jewish people, and the Jews understood it. Was there an actual war? Yes. But this is the idea that Rav Sternbach wants to come out with, what Chazal are trying to get it over here. Now, I will tell you, not everybody holds this way. Anybody know the name Rabbi Elazar HaKalir? Heard that name before?
Yes.
Rabbi Elazar, how do you know it? Come on, you know it. Everybody here knows it. You all know it. Not Pirkei Avos. Rabbi Elazar Kalir was not early Rishon, meaning almost Gaonim time. Rabbi Elazar Kalir wrote every single one of the Slichos, the Piyutim, throughout Tisha B'Av, the Kinos, all over, all these things. Whenever you see them, look for the name Rabbi Elazar HaKalir. He's all over the place. Rabbi Elazar Kalir writes in the Yotzros for Parsha Zachar. If you don't know what Yotzros are, you're lucky. You don't dive into a shul that has Yotzros. But if you do know what they are, you're awesome. Because you have a really long moose up those days. But in the Yotzros for Parsha Zachar, he says Amalek changed their language and their clothing in order to trick the Jews to look like the Canaanim. Well, look, guys, that argues with Rashi. Rashi just said they changed their language, but not their clothing. Rabbi Elazar Kalir says it clearly. Not only that, that's cute, by the way, clearly. Tosfos and Rosh Hashanah Dav Gimel brings down this Yotzer. He says, well, look, right over there, it says that they changed both. How could the Gemara say that they only changed one and not the other? It's clear that they did both. The Marsha tries to find a way to stick it in with Rashi, to make it shtim with Rashi, but it's not necessary. There's an actual Yalkut Shimoni that Rashi himself brings in Divrei Yomim Aleph, Perek Beis, Pasuk Chaf, where he says straight out, the Amalekim changed their language and their clothing to look like the Canaanim. Well, over here he says they only changed their language. Now, I don't have an answer for that stira in Rashi. I don't know if there's an actual stira or there's something different between what Kanani was doing, whether Kanani was Amalek. I don't know. That I can't tell you. I'm a little confused by that stira, and I didn't look it up enough, and I was unfortunately in a place where I had absolutely no svar mami except for the things that I was copying. So I had nothing to be able to look this up in. I don't have an idea as to what Rashi means. Maybe it's in different places. Maybe this is some other time, but the Shach says this as well. They changed their clothing and their language, but they didn't look like Canaan. Does anybody know where Canaan comes from? Who is Canaan's grandfather? Father all the way through. Come on, guys, you know. Canaan was the son of Ham, which means that Canaan was dark, African. He would have looked black, right? Or at least brown-skinned. That's what Canaan would have looked like. What does Esav look like?
Red-haired,
ruddy, right? Fair. So to speak. Like a fair-skinned. He would have been the lighter-skinned. The Germans, according to the Gra, were all Aryans. All Aryans are seed of Amalek. They're all supposed to be seed of Amalek. Listen to this. That means that Amalek himself may have been blonde hair, blue eyes. They look totally different. Says the Shach, the Jews looked at them. Their clothing was different. Their language was different. They looked like Canaanim. They spoke like Canaanim. But their faces were Amalek. And the Jews took one look at them and said, what's going on here? Who are these people that are dressed like Canaanim, speaking like Canaanim, but they don't look like Canaanim? They don't look like Canaanim. I've said this before, but it really does shock me. Again, Haman is not Jafar from Aladdin. That's not what he looks like. Haman was Amalek, right? In a Persian land, he was the only blonde-haired, blue-eyed guy there. That's the reason why he had 208 children. He looked different from everybody else. He had a completely different look. That's what Amalek is supposed to be like. And that's the Shach's line over here. This is what the Shach was referring to. Now, the Elisa Shachar brings up a bunch of questions here, which are obvious questions. When did the Jews hear them talk in this language? What does it mean? They were talking in Kanani. Guys, I don't know if you've ever been to war. Avi, I know you've been to war a couple times, right? Do you have any idea what the other people are saying? How do you hear them? You're not able to hear them. I know you're not shooting at them. But, like, what do you do? Well, if they yell out Allah Akbar, right, that's how you know what language they're speaking? No, I could say that. What does that mean, that they were hearing their language? Number two, how did the Amalekim know that language so well that they were able to speak it to one another just like that? They were able to just say, like, oh, let's talk in Kanani now. Okay. If I said to you guys, like, guys, we're going to give this year, the rest of this year in French, everyone's going to go like, oh, of course not. It's not going to work. It doesn't work that way. How in the world were they all of a sudden able to just get up and be like, okay, guys, Kanani language, ready? Go out to war. That makes no sense. That's number two. Number three, how in the world did the Jews know what language they were speaking? The Jews were listening. These guys have been slaves in Egypt. Granted, they've been in the Midbar for 39 years, but they've been slaves in Egypt. All of a sudden, they're listening, like, oh, that's a Kanani dialect. How would they know that? They didn't go to college. They didn't take Kanani as, like, a major. How in the world would they know? These are great questions. It's also strange that it's feel it doesn't work if you daven for one thing and it happens to be something else. That's also really, really strange. What's going on over here? So he answers, there must have been certain words that everybody knew were Kanani words. For example, Allah Akbar, something like that, right? That's an Arabic word. If somebody says it, you know it's Arabic. Everybody knows. You go, you see it all the time. That guy that comes up to you and says, like, Shalom, Shalom, are you a Jew as well? Right? Hey, I'm a Jew, right? And you're just like, you don't know what to do. Those certain words that everybody knows. It could be that the Malikim did not know Kanani. They didn't know how to speak Kanani. But they had certain words that they screamed out loud that were Kanani words, that everybody knew were Kanani words. And that way, they made it heard to the Jews. And the Jews were like, oh, they're Kananim. That might be the idea. That's what they were trying to do. But the Chizkuni says, the Kananim and Amalekim lived in the same areas. There are three places in the Chumash where it says the Kanani and the Amaleki were living together in that area. Three places like that. So it could be the Kanani and Amaleki were interchangeable. Not that they looked alike. Again, the Kanani would have been dark and the Amalekim would have been light, fair-skinned. But they would have been able to speak to one another, trade with one another. Remember, Kanani were merchants. So everybody may have spoken their language. So I'm not finding that. I think that's obvious, says the Chizkuni. They were living in the same area with one another, and that's the reason why they're somewhat interchangeable. He even says that you have to add on words to the Pasuk. He doesn't say literally, but meaning it's as if to say, and Amalekim were living there in the Negev, as if it says that over there. But I'll tell you something else over here. Isn't it strange that they don't go to Moshe Rabbeinu and ask him what to do? They're davening and they go through. You have Moshe Rabbeinu. Isn't that the first thing you should have done? The first thing is not, uh-oh, they're speaking Kanani, but they look like Amaleki. What do we do? What do you do? You have Moshe. Just go up, like, here, one, two, three. Moshe, what should we do? Oh, those are Amalekim. Okay, thank you. And they go out to war. Isn't that so obvious? I'm sorry?
Moshe must have been outside the camp after all the fiascos.
He definitely was. He was in the Olmoid. But remember, this is 39 years later. So 39 years later, they have been good for 38 and a half years. So it's been really good. They've been with Moshe Rabbeinu the whole time, but it's clear as day, I think, that Moshe Rabbeinu is not fighting this war. Moshe Rabbeinu is not involved in this war of Amalek. Now, we saw that before. Who fought the war against Amalek in Parshas Beshalach? Who fought that war? Who was sent out to war against Amalek?
Yoshua.
That's 100% correct. So over here, it could be that Moshe Rabbeinu was not supposed to be around. He wasn't supposed to fight. Rav Schwab even says, this is all supposed to be a kapara for Klal Yisrael. That since Klal Yisrael done the Meraglim and the Mapilim, now there's another situation like the Meraglim where they're about to fight. Are they going to run away from this fight as well? Are they going to be scared of this fight? So it could be that Klal Yisrael had to do it on their own. Regardless, the army seemed to be having to make their own decisions because it was being made on the battlefield and Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't with them. Because Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't there, they couldn't send a message in time to know what to do. They're about to start the battle. So when you're ready to go, you can't call in to Moshe Rabbeinu. What are we supposed to do? They had whoever was in charge, maybe Yoshua, maybe somebody else, and they said, what do we do? And they said, all right, we're going to have to daven stam. Well, daven stam, whoever our enemies are, that's who we're going to fight. Maybe that's what's going to be over here. Okay, Dorash David says there was a different plan altogether. I'm getting very into this, by the way. David, I think his name is Hofstetter. I forgot, but I'm getting really into it. I think the Sefer is in English also. I have it in Hebrew, but I think they have it in English. It's an awesome Sefer. If you have time, it's a 3-volume set, big, but very, very well worth it. They never wanted to fight the Jews here. They wanted to scare the Jews. The whole point was to scare them. Because the first time of the Meraglim, what did the Meraglim say when they came into Eretz Yisrael and they saw those giants? They said, we're not going to be able to fight. We're not going to be able to do anything. Well, they were too scared. So they dressed up as those nations, captured somebody, showed the Jews. I'm sure they did it the way that Arabs do it nowadays. You know, like somebody is like innocently like going around just like, I wonder if I should... And then grabbed, not in a war, not in a battle, just grabbed somebody and showed them, see, you do have to be scared of the Kanani nation. This was not about Amalek trying to destroy the Jews here. They were not trying to kill them. They were trying to scare them off and make sure they never came back. But the Jews were not the same Jews as before. Maybe 40 years ago that would scare them. These Jews were eating the mun their whole lives. They were sitting in Anani HaKavod their whole lives. They were drinking Be'er Shomerim their whole lives. These are not people who are going to be fooled anymore. These are not people who are going to see giants and say, how are we going to defeat them? These are people who see Sichon and Og and be like, the bigger they are, the harder they fall. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what they're going to say. These are it's a totally different breed of human being. They're not the same. Says Doresh David, they worked on their bitachon over 39 years. 39 years, they didn't get bothered by this. This was not an issue whatsoever. Now, Ibn Ezra says from Chazal, and this is brought down in that Gemara in Rosh Hashanah Gimel Med Aleph that I mentioned before, that this Kenan was actually Sichon, not Amalek. It was Sichon. Since all Amori are actually Kenanim, they're from the same family, therefore he's called the Kenani, the famous one. That's what Sichon was over here. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says he was known as Arod, right? King of Arod over here, because Arod is a donkey. He looked and acted like a donkey, and that's why Sichon was Kenani and also Arod at the exact same time. But Igor Dekala gives another reason. I'm going to go through this quickly, only because I feel like this is almost Kabbalah, and he says at the end of it, Hashem Yechaper. Whenever a sefer ends off with the words, God should have mercy on my soul for saying it, you know it's awesome, and you got to say it really quickly, okay? So this is all I'm going to tell you. Arod is a gematria of 274, which is a gematria of Rachel and Leah. Rachel and Leah. They stand for very two different things that can be used to go together. Machshava and Dibor, which are the two tikkunim, by the way, that you say in Tikkun Chatzos at night, which we don't say, but the two tikkunim stand for Machshava and Dibor. When you put Machshava and Dibor together, you have proper das, the ability to have das. Amalek stands for the destruction of that das, that a person should not be able to think clearly. You should knock down everything, and not just think, but really feel. Your feelings are gone. Your emotions are completely destroyed. That's where the powers of Rachel and Leah come in, and Amalek tries to destroy. For this reason, wars against Amalek have to be fought by Leah's children, right? Fought by Leah's children, and yet advised and commanded by Leah's children and fought by Rachel's children. Yosef and Binyamin fight Amalek, Shaul, we all know Shaul Amalek, right? Yoshua, we see they're the ones that fight against Amalek, and who's the last one? Shaul Amalek, Yoshua, who else fights against Amalek? Haman. Mordechai, from Shevet Binyamin. You need Rachel's children, and it's commanded from Leah's children. From all of Shevet, you have Moshe Rabbeinu, right? By Shaul, it was commanded by Shmuel Hanavi. Shmuel Hanavi was from Shevet, Levi. You had people that were commanding it from somebody else. Even Mordechai, by the way, he was from Binyamin, and he was also called Ish
Yehudi.
He was also known from Yehuda itself. Maybe that's why Mordechai is the same gematria, 274. He had that same exact power. This all took place in El, which is why Elul is a good time to work on your machshava and your dibor to come out with the proper das and to feel what you're doing. And that's the idea of the thought process that Arod was up against. There's something weird. The Chassam Sofer says in Bamibor, the harshest klipa, that means a shell of tumah that destroys a person, is through a malik known as Arod. It's a very high level of tumah. Anybody know the Gemara in Brachos Lamed Gimel with Rechini Medosa? Rechini Medosa, they heard about this snake that was killing people. So anybody know what he did?
He
put his foot right there on the hole. And what did the snake do? Bit him. And what happened?
The snake died.
Like a Chuck Norris joke, honestly, right? There's nothing better than that, right? He, like, after 3 days of painful agony, the snake died. It's the greatest joke in the world. It's Mamasha Gemara. All right, anyway, but regardless, that's the idea. This klipa, the arod, is what we're referring to over here. What I don't know, and I'm not positive about, I don't know why the word arod and arvud are similar to one another. One means a snake and one means a wild donkey. I don't know what the connection is. I know that donkey stands for the klipa of Yishmael. That's referring to the tumah of Yishmael, but that's all I get. I don't know what the connection is between those two, like a massive snake that kills you, a poisonous snake, and all of a sudden like a wild donkey. I just don't get what the pshat is behind that. Either way, regardless, the Chizkuni and the Shach say something very different. Bnei Yisrael were commanded not to fight Malchus Edom, right? That's told to them. You cannot fight Malchus Edom. That means that they can't fight Amalek. So how could they fight Amalek over here? They can't fight Edom. Then I'll have to fight. The answer is, they looked like Kenanim. And because they look like Kenanim, you can fight them now. That was the heter. Amalek killed themselves. Had Amalek been standing there as Amalek, right? And they would have been like, fight us. The Jews would have been like, yeah. And walked away. But because Amalek are like, I don't know, say it in Kanani, fight us, Kanani style, right? Then all of a sudden she's like, okay, we're fine. We can kill Kanani. We can't kill Amalekim. So they killed Amalekim because they were Kananim. That's the shot they said. Brilliant, Chizkuni and Shach. Sfas Emes says, they mamish, they changed their language, they destroyed themselves. This happens all the time. This is what happens to Amalek. Utsu Eitza Visufar. They give these Eitzas, and it gets destroyed. They literally knock themselves out. Okay, Ibn Ezra says, there were many people that say that this pasuk about the king of a road and going through was actually written and added in later by Yoshua. They wrote, they said, this whole pasuk, Chaf Aleph Aleph, was not written by Moshe Rabbeinu. It was not in the original Torah. When Yoshua wrote his Sefer, he added this into the Sefer Torah itself. The Ibn Ezra said there are people that say that. He says, but those people are absolutely not saying the truth. There are two places called Arad. One is in Tzfas, not the Tzfas that you know and love all the way up north, but a Tzfas that was down south in Eretz Yisrael that Yehuda and Shimon fight in the beginning of Yoshua and Shoftim. And there's another place that's called Arad, that's outside of Eretz Yisrael, which is what we're talking about over here. The Ramban seems to say a little bit different. There were people who lived in Eretz Canaan who heard about the Jews, and they came out to destroy them now because they knew now was the time when the Jews were going to come in. This is the 40th year. They knew the Jews were coming close. So they went out to go fight the Jews right then. They heard that the Jews were coming. And that's what it means. Vayishma Kanani. The Kanani heard the Jews are coming. The Jews, it was like Paul Revere running through the streets. The Jews are coming, right? And they said, so they came out from their land, from where they lived in Eretz Yisrael, to fight the Jews. They lost the battle in the desert. And then when the Jews entered Eretz Yisrael, they fought the city and took over the king in the times of Yoshua. So meaning, there was the city of Arod, and the king came with his army out to the Jews in the Midbar. And they defeated that entire army there, and they destroyed them and whatever they had with them. They took all of their stuff and they made it into spoils for the Beis HaMikdash and burned whatever they needed to do. And then later on, they came into the cities and they destroyed the cities later. Even though it says the word Arayim, it could be that extra cities outside of Eretz Yisrael. That's the way the Malbim understands it. The Ramban doesn't say that clearly, but that's the idea behind it. That's a brilliant answer as to what's going on over here. Okay, one last thing over here, and really, I don't know how... What time do we got? I don't even have a watch on me. What do we have? What? Oh, okay. Let's see what we got over here. We don't have a great way of going through this, but this is really, really good. Rashi asks what they did in order to decide just to fight. He said because Aaron died and the Anani Akava went away. Simple, says the Shach, it was a test. Moshe and Aaron and Miriam were alive for so long. Maybe it was all three of them that had a schus that allowed the Jews to win. But what if Aaron and Miriam are gone? Then maybe just Moshe Rabbeinu is not good enough. Maybe Moshe Rabbeinu's chus on its own is not good enough to be able to fight. That's why they fought against Bnei Yisrael right now, and they were wrong. Moshe Rabbeinu's chus was good enough. He didn't need Moshe, Miriam, and Aaron to be able to fight for them. That's not going to be there. But there's more. I'm sorry?
Wasn't Moshe also an Avel this time?
He would have been an Avelos, yeah. Now, you're getting to something really good. Tiferes Yonason, Rabbi Yonason Eipschitz, brings this down. When I read this, I almost fell off the plane. It was awesome. Like, I wanted to break open the window of the plane and dance on the wing. That's how good this shot was. This is so good. I told it over. My wife was asleep, right? But I turned to, like, the stewardess who was like, come here for a second. I got to tell you this. She didn't understand it at all, right? So I turned to the guy who was sitting next to me. I'm like, you got to hear this. Nobody understood. I was like, what is wrong with you people? You have no soul. It was so good. Rabbi Yonason Eipschitz says, here's the pshat. Why do they want to fight them now? Because the Anani HaKavod were gone. Guys, Bnei Yisrael didn't give themselves bris milas throughout the desert. For 40 years, they didn't give themselves bris milas. You know why? Because in order to get a bris mila and to be healed, you need the northern wind. The northern wind is a powerful wind that is used as a refuah, and that would heal them. Here's the deal, though. The northern wind did not blow for 40 years in the desert. Because if the northern wind would have blown, that Anani HaKavod would have blown away. So for 40 years in the desert, they couldn't give themselves bris milas, Chazal say, because there was no northern wind. There was no northern wind because of the Anani HaKavod. So when the Amalekim saw that the Anani HaKavod were gone, what comes back? The northern wind comes back, which means the Jews were giving themselves bris milah. So therefore, the Amalekim looked at it and said, This is the perfect time to fight them. They just gave themselves bris milas. It's not that the Anani HaKavod were gone and therefore they were able to fight Bnei Yisrael. It's that the Anani HaKavod were gone, so Bnei Yisrael for sure just gave themselves bris milas, and if they gave themselves bris milas, they're weak. This is the best time to fight them. That's why Amalek came to them dafka right now. It's because they saw the Anani HaKavod were gone that they expected them to get bris milas. The only reason why I don't like it, at the end of the day, why didn't they give themselves bris milas then? Why didn't they do it? My only answer is that they thought the Anani HaKavod were coming back any second. That's the only answer I have. And remember, in order to get the bris mila, how many days do you have to worry about it? 3 days, at least. I've never had it as an adult. So I can't imagine what it's like, right? But I assume at least 3 days is going to be the problem. What if the Anani HaKavod come back tomorrow and the northern wind is gone tomorrow? Then it could be, you have a sakana. What's up? Oh, no, no, there wasn't a hand.
What's with the northern wind? I know it's a different tangent, but not a couple. Why just the northern wind?
Baba Basra, Daf Chaf Amud Aleph. So now let's go on, right over here. That's all I can tell you. Yeah, Baba Basra, Chaf Amud Aleph is the best way to look. There's another Gemara in Shabbos, but I'm forgetting where, Lamed something or other. But I think it's more based on the Rishonim over there. But yeah, Baba Basra, Chaf Amud Aleph, it's a weird Gemara. Can't tell you much more than that. Yeah.
How could they
what? I'm sorry?
How did they
have kids if they didn't have bris milah? Oh, no, no. They had Puravu. They didn't have bris milah. When Yeshua brought them into Eretz Yisrael, see, here's the problem. Again, we're not seminary girls, so that's the biggest issue by all of us. It's a Pashat Perek in Yeshua. I forgot where, Tez Zayin or Yud Zayin, where it says, Yeshua gave them all bris milahs and priya. That was the introduction of priya, which is a different part of bris milah. It was given over there because they hadn't given themselves bris milah for the last 40 years. It's a straight out Pasuk, so we see that the problem was right there for them. So who was the Shvi? Who was that captured girl? The answer is, says Rashi, it was a simple Shifcha that was with them. There was a Shifcha that was with them at that time, and that maidservant was captured and taken by Amalek over here. The Chidah says, Mimenu Shvi plus the Kolel is Sin Gematria's Shifcha Levad Haya. The Geras Kamel says, Shvi is Rashi Tevis Shifcha Bas Yisrael. That's what it referred to, and that's the woman that was taken over here. Nurmban says it was the first time that their sins caused them to have a casualty. A casualty of war. Granted, not a death. Nobody died. But somebody was captured. That had never happened before, and they were shocked by it over here. Tiferes Yonason says there was a sin. The sin was they should have immediately stormed the heavens when they heard that Aaron was going to die. Moshe Rabbeinu goes to the people and says, Aaron's about to die. And the people are like, yeah, it happens to everyone. 123 years old, lived a good life. That's not what you do! I remember somebody not too long ago, when Rav Eliashiv was 102, I forgot what it was, when Rav Eliashiv was 101, he was very sick and kept going to the hospital, so we got up and we said in yeshiva, we said a big thing at Tehillim. Said he just went to the hospital, we're going to say Tehillim, we're gonna, so the guy comes up to me, all innocent, and I totally understand it, right? And he says, Rabbi, I don't understand, he's 101, just let him die. Now it's not a bad taina, Kuf Gimel Amabez, that's what Amsa Debei Rebbe does. The maidservant of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi davened that Rabbi Yehuda Anasi should die because he was undergoing so much pain. She said, he should die. I said, that's not how we look at it. We look at, you have an 101-year-old Rebbe Yashiv that is an extra shmira for all of Klal Yisrael. We don't understand that. We don't know what it means. And yes, when a tzaddik dies, there's a kapara of some sort. It's better when the person's alive. The line, I forgot what it was, where Chaim Kanievsky said during the Scud missile crisis, was he said, as long as Rav Shach is alive in Bnei Brak, nothing's going to hit Bnei Brak. That's what he claimed. That's a hard line. That's a hard line to be able to say. Rav Eliashiv, his father-in-law, said, I didn't know my son-in-law became a Navi. It's a hard line to be able to say. It's a crazy line. But this is the idea over here. You sit there and they should have stormed the heavens and said, 123 years old, you should live to 150. That's what he should do. That's the idea behind it. And the Ramban goes on and he says there were more captives. In fact, if you look at Targum Yonasan, it seems that there was Shvi Rabba. There were many people captured, not just one Shifcha. But Rashi says one Shifcha. Just Targum Yonasan seems to say something else. But now we have something a little bit different. The Netziv says this is all Mina Shamayim. God wanted to show them how to act in war before they fought against the 31 kings, before they went against Sihon and Og. He wanted them to be involved with war. So he allowed one person to be captured so that the Jews will fight an easy nation, and then it'll get harder as time goes on. That's what he wanted them to do. He wanted them to have confidence to go in. It's like a college football team that plays against a nobody at first. They win 89-0. So then when they play University of Michigan next, then it's like, oh, now we have chashivas. Right? That's the idea. Get them confidence so it's over there. The Ora Chaim has a great shot over here. Tom Bedas points out something. They went to war for one shifcha. One maidservant was captured. Not a Jewish woman, not a Jewish man, not a child, a shifcha. A woman who came from another nation and wasn't fully Jewish. She came in and they went to war for her. That shows you how great Klal Yisrael is. How connected they all were to each other. They had to work together. They couldn't stand. One person is captured, but she's a shifcha. I don't care if she's a shifcha. We have to go save her right now. Like Avraham Avinu goes to save the four cities, of the five cities of Sodom, etc., Amora, and everything like that. There's Lot. But Lot ran away from you. Lot hated you. So what? So what? We go and we do everything we can to be able to save our friends and our relatives. Sfas Emes in Yir Tuf Reish Samach says, Bnei Yisrael realized they had done something wrong. When a shifcha came from another nation to join them, and it didn't last, she was taken away. They realized something's wrong. We should have people staying by us. They were worried. And all of a sudden they realized, maybe this is a sign from Shemayim. Says the Sfas Emes, Lo Sechaya Kol Neshama means, don't let anybody live. If we allow people to be with us, they're not going to stay with us. That was the sign that they saw from the shifcha being captured. We're going to get shifchos, and we have to get rid of them right afterward. That's scary. That's scary to think about. That they understood from this, they didn't get back the shifcha. They kicked out any nation that came anywhere close to them, and they wouldn't allow anyone else to join them from this point forward. They never really got her back. That's the idea behind it. Listen, there is a Rav Chaim Vital here that's brought down from the Chida and an Abir Yaakov. When we all turn into massive Kabbalists with Rabbi Raka, maybe we'll all sit on the corner of Jarvis and Albany and we'll learn this Chida from Rav Chaim Vital and the Abir Yaakov together. Until that point, there is a Remez over here that is absolutely crazy. It's referring to the Yetzer Hara that gets a hold of man. It's unbelievable. But for now, we're just not there yet. 37. It's so close. I'm so close. So close. Once I hit 40, guys, no reason for the video anymore. I'm just going to disappear to a cloud. That's what it's going to be. We'll stop with that, guys. Have a good Shabbos.